In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Yeah.
Let's all go to the lobby.
It's time to talk movies and more as Alan Adams joins us in studio. Happy Monday, Mr. Adams.
And to you as well, Mr. Kimball.
Lovely to see you, sir.
Nice to see you as well.
How was your weekend?
It was great. Had a lovely Thanksgiving experience.
Nice, nice. Were you home or did you travel?
We went down to the in-laws down east. It was a very small gathering. It was just Sheridan's folks, Sheridan and I, my sister, and my father-in-law's brother. We just had a nice sort of lovely little turkey day, and we actually stayed down there on Friday as well, which, man, it's so much easier to not do anything when you're not at your house.
Oh gosh, yes.
You know what I mean? There's always stuff that needs mm-hmm. that needs doing. But if you're 2 hours away, well, guess I'm just gonna have to lay on this couch all afternoon. I don't make the rules.
Right. But happy to go along with them.
Right. And then we came back on Saturday and had a lovely weekend at home. So it was
perfect.
Yeah, it was nice. Got a nice long sort of respite, recharge the batteries a little bit, which was good.
Yeah, because you've got a very big weekend coming up. Let's talk a little bit about what is back and what is happening Friday and Saturday in Downtown Bangor.
Man, it's crazy, right? Like the Improv Me Festival is making its triumphant return after two years dormant.
Right.
Our last one was in 2019, and we're back. It's slightly smaller. We're only doing two sessions, one Friday night and one Saturday night. We're in a new location. We'll be at the Bangor Arts Exchange. They're on Exchange Street. Josh Gass and the folks at Launchpad have been gracious hosts to us for some time now, and we figured, they got that beautiful ballroom there. Why not take advantage of it?
Darn right.
We've got a nice collection of groups from all over the state coming to join us. Including a gentleman who's going to be a guest of yours tomorrow. So you could probably talk about all this all over again.
Dennis Price.
Yeah. The Capital City Improv crew is going to be in the house on Friday night, as will local group Queen City Improv, our friends from Southern Maine Balderdash Academy, and then, the focus group. There, those idiots are going to be there.
Heard of them.
Doing stuff. We decided that what we're going to do is we are going to open Friday night's show and we are going to close Saturday night's show. So we're sort of bookending the festival. And then Saturday night, we've got some great performers as well, including the wonderful Yes and Co., founded by Focus Group Emeriti, Samuel Kirkendall. Rich, I think somebody we know is going to also be involved in that show a little bit.
I am, yeah, because I haven't been able to get to focus group practices, and I wanted to be a part of the festival, but Sam reached out. They're doing an improv called Armando, where you have a monologist, someone who tells true stories, short story, and that is what sort of sets the improvisers off on their way, so... They'll do some scenes inspired by my weird stories.
Right. I got to tell you, man, it's super fun. I was their monologist when they did a set at Port Fringe a few years back. And it's a lot of fun. And, you just go up there, you riff for 3 or 4 minutes, and then they just fire away. And it's great because they're really a talented group. Sam's put together a really talented bunch. Some folks that, have been involved with other groups who have been at the festival and they've been around for a while. Folks like Tara McDonough, Jen Whitley. So that's really exciting. Speaking of Tara and Jen. Another group that's playing on Saturday, the wonderful You Should Smile More, which is an all-female sort of improv collective. Their whole deal is it's a rotating cast. It's just basically female improvisers from all walks of Maine improv just coming together and just getting after it. It's really a lot of fun. It's a wonderful concept. They're all incredibly talented, and it's going to be a really exciting performance out of them. And as I said, you know, the focus group, we're going to go ahead and try to close things out.
Awesome. So this is both Friday and Saturday starting at 7.
Yep. Show starting at 7. That's an hour earlier for our regulars. And, you know, you're a late arriving crowd anyway, so please be aware. Show starting at 7. We're going to try to stay as close to that start time as possible because, you know, with all these groups, like, everybody's doing relatively short sets, but still, like, that's a lot of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we want to get out of there, you know, we're shooting. It's probably going to be about 2.5 hours per session. Tickets are $10 in advance, $12 at the door. There are also a very limited number of festival passes. You want to talk about a sweet deal, Rich? $16.
Whoa.
$16 will get you in both. Will get you in both nights. But again, there are very few of these available. So if this sounds like something that is interesting to you, you should go to the Bangor Arts Exchange website, find them on Facebook, and check it out because they're going fast. And then afterwards we're going to go downstairs to Tim Gallen has graciously agreed to stay open a little bit later than he ordinarily would to play host to us after the show. So we're going to go down there, have some beers, and there's a little stage there. So who knows what'll happen? It's a bunch of improvisers in one room, so it's probably going to get weird.
Post show shenanigans at Black Bear Brew. That's great.
Indeed.
Well, let's talk movies, too. We've got at least two, maybe three to discuss this week. Where should we begin?
I'll toss off this one real quick. I watched a movie because I had all the time in the world this weekend. I watched a movie called Fantasy Football. It's streaming on Paramount Plus, and it is, I mean, it's basically an hour and a half long Madden commercial. it's very sweet in a very sort of kid movie kind of way, but you have a young lady whose dad is a journeyman running back in the NFL, bouncing from team to team. He's currently with the Atlanta Falcons, through a ridiculously convoluted set of circumstances, she comes into possession of we'll just call it a magic copy of the latest iteration of Madden. She is a very gifted player. And it turns out that now, when she plays as her dad, what she does in the game, he does on the field. Don't ask too many questions. Don't pull at any of these strings, because there's a lot that doesn't make sense about this movie. That said, it's very cute, very fun. Again, as far as, like, hour and a half, like, video game commercials go, it could be worse. You know, the young lady, it's like there's this whole subplot about she's on a robotics team and making friends and all that stuff, but really they just want you to buy Madden, and since I already own it, like, that's it was a little bit lost on me, but I didn't fall asleep watching it, which considering when I was watching it, like, that's pretty impressive.
And filled with turkey
pie. You name it. Fantasy Football, Paramount Plus. If you've got young kids, tweens probably, who are into video games, like, you should probably check this out. But other than that, you could probably let it be.
All right. Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Downtown. Look, I was already a sucker for Goodnight Oppie. I mean, they had me at the get-go. But then when I saw the poster where Opportunity looks so much like Wall-E.
Rich, look, I'm
going to cry when this land space rover dies, aren't I?
Yes, Rich, you are. I did. I'm starting to thinking about it. Like, right now, I'm starting to. Yes, Goodnight Oppie. It's a documentary written and directed by Ryan White. It's an Amazon Studios production. It's currently available on Amazon Prime Video. And it's the story of the Mars rover program. From soup to nuts. So from its very beginnings, the pitch, the initial construction, the planning, the logistics to get them like to Mars, and then the entirety of the mission, all playing out with this wonderful combination of talking head interviews, like interviews with people who are intimately involved with the program, archival footage. Lots of archival footage from every step, which is really great. And then some wonderful recreations where it's almost like, so you get like almost like a first person sort of sense of what it was like for the rovers to be on Mars. And look, we as human beings have a tendency to want to humanize whether it's pets or wild animals or plants or inanimate objects or, you know, exploratory robots. But here's the thing. For those who are unfamiliar, the Mars rover mission was intended to last 3 months. Spirit and Opportunity were designed to do their job, to go. Their whole deal was to do geological experiments in an effort to discover whether liquid water had ever been part of the deal on the surface of Mars, in an effort to determine if, you know, the capability of sustaining biological life was ever there. And so they do their 3 months, and everything seems to still be working. So they're like, well, to heck with it. Let's see how far this ride takes us. As it turns out, pretty far.
Yeah.
You know, Spirit lasted almost I want to say like 7.5 years. They both landed on Mars in January of 2004, and Spirit shut down in May of 2011, and then Opportunity's mission ended in 2019.
Yeah.
It's wild to think about this incredible piece, the feat of engineering and science, just getting it there and getting and like maintaining operations for 3 months over, you know, these vast distances is wildly impressive. The fact that they were able to just keep going.
Mm.
And then, as with anything, like we're human beings, like you spend that much time, you know, engaging, you can't help but attach, you know, anthropomorphize these things. Like Spirit and Opportunity, like the people that they talk to in these interviews, it's never it. It's always her. You know what I mean? And it's just little things like that where you're just like, oh, like these rovers meant a lot to these people. And you get to see as, you know, their relationships, you know, we see them in the present day, yes, but we're also seeing these people along the way in this archival footage, where you get like, oh, it's like, oh, hey, here's this engineer just starting out working on the rover, and now he's a talking head, you know, 15 years later, and he's talking about it. And then, oh, and there's this wonderful through thread about a woman who is who is a scientist on the Opportunity team toward the end. She was inspired to get into this because in high school she won a contest to be in the room when they launched one of the rovers.
Wow.
So she's 16 years old watching this launch, and now, you know, and then a dozen years later, like, she's in the room, like, helping to run the show. Like, just an incredible you know, confluence of circumstances, you know. And then they run through like the wake up songs, and so you know, like, so real talk, it's probably the most banging soundtrack you're ever going to see in a documentary about NASA Mars rovers. They would do all these wonderful, like, basically all the same stuff they would do for like the astronauts, mm-hmm. for the human explorers. Like, they would do these same things or variations of those things for these rovers. And so, you know, when you get to that end point, I'm not even gonna pretend like I didn't cry. I'm a soft touch anyway.
Well, I just remember how poignant it was when they got the last communication from Opportunity.
You know, and it's just like, it's a remarkable feat of you know, of science and engineering. But beyond that, it's just this wonderful demonstration of how powerfully our desire to connect can manifest, and our ability to find those connections even when, you know, maybe they're not quote unquote real. But like, you can't look at these people talking about this experience and feel like they're talking about anyone other than a colleague, a friend, a member of their family. Yeah. Like, it's really, I mean, it's really heartfelt. It's really touching. And I was, you know, I knew I was going to dig it, but man, it was just such a wonderful viewing experience.
I can't wait to watch it. Narrated by Angela Bassett.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's really good.
All right, that's the story. And good night, Oppie. How about Strange World?
All right, Rich, I'm going to climb up on my soapbox for just a second.
Please do.
There are a lot of people out there who make it a point to loudly and vehemently condemn works of pop culture because they believe some sort of untoward agenda is being advanced. They don't watch the movie.
No.
They don't engage with it in any real way, but someone somewhere told them that something that they don't like happens in this movie. And so, by gosh, they're, you know, Disney is destroying families, Rich.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And, you know, and so in this, in the new movie, Strange World, there is, God forbid, a teenager who has a same-sex crush.
But that never happens.
No, that's not a thing that happens. Oh, you know, and you certainly don't want to subject, you know, other, you know, you don't want to subject the, will no one think of the children, Rich?
Right.
Because they can't be made aware that gay people exist.
Right, and if they see that, they could become that themselves.
I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
Right, right.
And then, of course, there's also a liberal agenda regarding climate change as part of the plot.
Well, that's a hoax.
That is also you know, reason to you know, to fear the woke agenda of the Disney Corporation, because you know what corporations do, get woke. That's a thing that happens.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's right.
Okay, so I'm gonna climb down from the soapbox. Because here's the thing. There are valid reasons to criticize this movie. Like, it's like, I enjoyed myself. It's visually stunning. It's got this wonderful sort of combination of, it's like pulp magazines meet Fantasia kind of thing, with a, you know, healthy sprinkling of like Max Fleischer vibes. Like, it's I mean, it's just beautiful to look at. Like, you can really tell that the animators were given sort of carte blanche to let their imaginations run wild, and so you have these wonderful creature designs that are, you know, very different than what you've seen in the past from Disney. Looks great. I think the ideology there, I think, is important. I think it's representational. I think it's progressive. I think that's a good thing. The vocal performances are strong. But there's not really much in the way of a story. Like, it's the narrative's thin, and there are some pretty significant holes in the plot, and it doesn't really hold together as far as a narrative is concerned. And that undermines the overall impact of the film, you know? And that's, you know, I'm not expecting perfection. You know, it's like it's an animated movie for kids. Like, I don't need it to be, you know, War and Peace, but it has to, like, the story has to fully connect, and it never really does, and that sort of undermines the impact of the rest of it. You know, and again, there's a lot about this movie that's really good, and it's just a shame that you know, it's sort of lost in the narrative shuffle a little bit. As far as that story goes, we're in a small faraway land called Avalonia that is hemmed in on all sides by a massive mountain range that is impassable. There's a family led by the Clade family, led by Jager Clade, voiced by Dennis Quaid, who's an explorer, and he's devoted his life to trying to find a way over, under, around, through these mountains. His son, Searcher, voiced by Jake Gyllenhaal, has been part of the family business since he was a baby, but he has a different sensibility. Like, he's less about, you know, forging through to the unknown, and more about, like, finding out more about what's already here. And so when we meet them, they're on yet another expedition to sort of find their way through the mountains. When Searcher discovers this strange glowing plant, and he's like, we should find out more about this plant. And his dad is like, no, we forge on. The rest of the crew is like, well, no, maybe we should really find out more about this plant. And Jager heads off into the snow, not to be seen again.
Oh boy.
25 years later, Searcher is now a farmer. He has cultivated this plant, now called Pando, and it has become a renewable energy source that has allowed the people of Avalonia to make gigantic leaps forward technologically. Like, they basically went from you know, horses and buggies to you know, weird airships and flying machines in the course of a quarter century. And you know, and he, you know, farms with his wife Meridian, voiced by Gabrielle Union, and his son Ethan. Now, Ethan is the aforementioned teenager who, you know, clutch pearls, has a same-sex crush that literally appears on screen for, I'm going to say, maybe a minute, probably less than that, but maybe a minute. But, you know, that's enough to ruin childhoods the world over. So Ethan is part of the family business, but he has thoughts about, he's like, maybe he would like to be an explorer like his grandfather, who his dad never talks about. Well, one day, the president of Avalonia, who also happened to be part of that crew long ago and is voiced by Lucy Liu, shows up and says, something's wrong with Pando. Searcher, you have to come with us. We have to figure it out. Reluctantly, he goes. But since this is it's this kind of movie, it's not long before we realize that, oh no, the son has stowed away along with the adorable three-legged dog, and the mom has come after him to try to get him before they go too far. But then mom winds up on the ship, and away we go into the bowels, these caves and tunnels in the mountains. But an incident happens, and they wind up going farther than anyone has ever gone before, and they come out into, well, a strange world, Rich. an entirely new place buried deep within the mountains. Bright colors and mysterious creatures, the likes of which you've never seen. You know, it's like nothing they've ever seen before. It's beautiful, but also perhaps dangerous. And they have to figure out, like, how is this connected to the slowly dwindling energy of Pando? And, there's a lot of unknown here, but there's also a familiar face.
Oh, my.
That's right. Grandpa's here.
Oh, boy.
And he has been for 25 years. He's been doing battle against the various creatures. Some of them are very scary. The giant tentacle blobs called Reapers and crazy pink pterodactyl-looking things. You know, and there are some very cute things floating around as well. But this group has to decide, come together and figure out how to save the heart of Pando. They have to make their way to the central root system to figure out what's happening. But also, Jaeger thinks he knows the way through the mountains, and he wants to see what's on the other side.
Oh, boy.
And so the goal is to do both, but perhaps only one can be accomplished.
Mm.
And we'll have to see, well, what's most important, Rich. Wow. And then, you know, there are some twists, and some things happen, some wonderful set pieces, and away we go. Look, like I said, like, story-wise, it doesn't really pass muster. Like, it's just not, it just doesn't fit together in the way that you want this sort of story to fit together. But like I said, it's so gorgeous to look at. You know, it just feels like inspired work by the animation team. And sometimes that's all you need from these movies, is to just be able to sit back and enjoy just this sort of sumptuous aesthetic that is so different than what you've, you know, normally see from movies. And yes, it's computer animation as opposed to hand drawn, but it's more organic than computer generated animation generally feels in a lot of ways, which is really nice. But as I said, it's not a perfect movie, far from it. It's good, not great. There are loads of valid criticisms to be aimed at it. Unfortunately, the criticisms you will find on the internet. Well, Rich, you'll be shocked to hear this. I'm not sure these people are arguing in good faith.
What?
I know.
Oh, come on.
You know, it feels like they're making up an agenda to be mad at, to advance their own agenda. I don't know. Like, that seems, I mean, it doesn't seem like the people that I know on the internet. Like, I've always understood the internet to be filled with very nice,
you know,
thoughtful and well-spoken, articulate people who have nuanced opinions about important things. Not that it matters. Strange World is shaping up to be one of the biggest bombs that Disney has had in a number of years. Just tanked at the box office on the holiday weekend, and I'm honestly not sure why. Like, I think, I think it was maybe a little esoteric to do the four quadrant appeal. There were obviously the internet D-bags out there doing their best to undermine it, and it's an original piece. You know, it's like, if this was a sequel to something, or if it was based on some sort of previously existing IP, I bet it does better. But the truth is, like, I admire the ambition of the swing. It's unfortunate that didn't fully connect.
Alan Adams, talking movies here on DAPTEM. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Hope your week goes well.
Yours as well.
We'll see you Friday night.
Yes, sir.
Alan Adams, talking movies. Pass the popcorn.